everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 72.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
This is my second attempt at this podcast. The first attempt, I recorded it okay, but while I was editing the recording, I was about three quarters of the way done, and to be perfectly honest, I was doing a lot of other things at the same time while I was recording this, editing the podcast with Audacity. I was also listening to music. I was also running around on the web, and there was probably some flash videos going on, and really doing a lot of things that I say don't do while you're editing files with Audacity. Basically, what you want to do is, especially when you're using Pulse Audio like I am, and it's tied in with port audio. Audacity is tied in with port audio, and it's a big mess, I think. You basically just want to be running Audacity, editing with Audacity, and that's it. So what had happened was I went to close Audacity, and it crashed when I went to exit. I had the file about three quarters of the way edited, and I was going to go ahead and take a break, so I was just going to close it and come back and finish it later. And when I came back and opened it up later, it sounded terrible. So when it crashed, it did something to the recording. So I'm redoing the recording now. But to be perfectly honest, the podcast wasn't that great anyhow. So you really didn't miss anything. And I wasn't really that upset when I had to redo it. So this time, I'm going to listen to my own good judgment and go ahead and do the recording by itself and go ahead and edit it, the recording by itself, and not try to do about 10 different things at the same time. Also, what I was doing when I was editing that podcast recording was I was also updating my system, and I use Gen 2 here. So it was emerging stuff, compiling programs from source, so it was using a lot of the CPU, which is probably not a good idea either when you're recording and editing recordings and stuff like that. So everything included, it crashed. So hopefully that was the reason. But now I'm really going to be disappointed if I go through this all again, and then using my better judgment, I edit it without anything open, and it does it again three quarters of the way through, then I'm going to be upset. But hopefully that's not going to happen. So if you don't hear from me complaining again, then you'll know that everything went through all right. So let's see. What have I been up to? One of the things I've been enjoying using is the Google Chromium browser, Chromium, and I'm using version 5.0.307.9. And it has a little bit of a problem with the fonts, but I've figured that out pretty much on my end here. If you go to bear with me here. If you go to, here I am doing what I say don't do, opening up files and everything while you're doing a recording. But if you go to, in your home folder, and you go to, let me see, I think it's .config. Mm-hmm, yep, .config. And Chromium, C-H-R-O-M-I-U-M, all lower. You go inside that file, and then you're going to see default, and then preferences. Now, you can't edit it while it's running, but you can edit it once you close it. So it works really good. I got the fonts all look nice. It's really a nice browser. Once you get used to it, it's a little bit different than Firefox, but it's really nice. The other thing I did was I have a Gentoo virtual dedicated server. I went to bear with me again. I'm not very organized, am I? It's at host virtual, which on the front of the Gentoo.org website, they actually, there's an ad there. Now, they don't pay for the ad. Gentoo puts that on their front page as far as payback, because they give Gentoo a lot of servers and all donate. They donate a lot of services to Gentoo. So in respect for that, or a repercussion for that, or in partnership with that, they put an ad on the front of the Gentoo webpage. So I had read on IRC and also had talked to a couple of the other Gentoo developers, and this particular company, Host Virtual, has been very, very good to Gentoo. And they're also giving them some more web servers. Well, it's all kind of different servers. There are web servers. There's mainly rsync servers, file servers, a little bit of everything. So they're giving them some more. So I thought, well, they got a special on $14.95 a month. So for the $14.95 a month, I figured, what the heck, I'll go ahead and get me one of these virtual dedicated servers. I've been wanting to put all of my learning and server maintenance expertise to the test. I have a little home server here, home web server. It's open to the web, but being I'm on DSL and I didn't want to do too much. Also, they block, you know, I can't run like a full-fledged mail server here because they block port 25. I'm not exactly sure if port 25 is blocked. I think it is, but you can't send any mail out. You have to go through them if you're going to send any mail out. So you can't have a full-fledged mail server and different stuff like that. So I didn't want to be using a whole lot of bandwidth here at the house, because I didn't want them to get upset with me either, because this is a home account. It's not a business account. And if it looks like I'm running a business out of here, I'm sure that they wouldn't be too happy, and it probably violates the terms of my agreement, and they might want me to go elsewhere. So just doing the right thing. I have that little web server here. It's dwabbott.com, but it's mainly on my own little intranet here at home that I use it. It's not really, the only thing open to the web is the web server, and it's not really running anything. It's just basic HTML and CSS, so it's not really anything too special and too bandwidth intensive. I don't put up any files for download or anything like that. So this virtual dedicated server at Host Virtual, they offer different images, and you can choose which image that you want. Being I'm a Gentoo fanboy, naturally I chose the Gentoo image. Now they have Fedora, they have CentOS, they have Debian. I'm pretty sure they have, I'm not sure, they maybe have SUSE too, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But I knew they had Gentoo. And the actual image for Gentoo is the 2010 image, which is on the 10 profile. It's a recent image. It gives you just a basic install. It's basically just the compiler, the kernel, networking, and that's just about it. There's not anything else There's no web server installed. There's no, you can install everything else you're going to install. So the first thing I did was was to go ahead and get Apache 2 installed. And while I was installing Apache 2, I went ahead and set it up for PHP. Because the next thing that I wanted to install was a Doku Wiki. I wanted to have a wiki up so that I could document what I was installing. So in future reference, if somebody else wants to get a virtual server, they'll have a little bit of the background of what it's like, what you have to do, especially for Gen 2. Most of this stuff is not only for Gen 2, it's cross-platform. Some of the stuff is specific to Gen 2. So I went ahead and installed Apache and PHP. Oh, and by the way, the website is noon, N-O-O-O-N-E.info. And the wiki is noon, noon.info/wiki. And I picked that name. I thought it was pretty interesting. I picked the info. I went to GoDaddy to get the domain name. And I see on RSC a lot of times they'll ask a question, who's going to take care of this package? And they'll say noon, N-O-O-N-E, meaning nobody. So, or no, there's no information available, something like that. So the dot info was cheap. It was a dollar and something a year. So I figured I'd go with that. And the noon, which is basically none or none, no, or no information. So that's what I got come up with, the noon, no information, no info. And the regular N-O-O-O-N-E, N-O-O-N-E, wasn't available, but the N-O-O-O-N-E was available. So that's how I picked that. And so the next step was, in order to get anything on the website, you're going to have to install some type of an FTP server on there. And the one that I chose is Pure FTPD, which is the FTP is the server, but the FTPD, they always have that D after it. That's the Debian. That just means it's running all the time, basically. So I went ahead and installed that and got that configured. And the next thing that I did was I configured MySQL. And I used, there's a very good how-to on a startup guide, MySQL startup guide. It's on the Gen 2 documentation, but it's not specific to Gen 2. It's the commands are for MySQL, so they're pretty generic. And all this stuff, I'll put a link up on linuxcrazy.com. And like I said, this is podcast number 72. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, just go ahead and email me at david@linuxcrazy.com. And stop by IRC. I'm usually around all the time after around 1400, between 1400 and 1800 UTC. After that hour, I'm usually always on there until, pretty much early in the morning. So stop by, say hello at on Freenode at pound Linux Crazy, or some people say hash Linux Crazy. So we've got Apache 2 installed, and we've got PHP installed. We've tested PHP. PHP is working. We've tested Apache. We've started up. I created a little homepage, index.html. I created the folder, the wiki folder for my Doku Wiki. And next we have to do is we have to do IP tables. The web server, or the server has no firewall. It comes just with a base install. So before I open this up, I wanted to make sure I have a fighting chance that I don't get eaten alive by everyone. So I wanted to go ahead and set up IP tables. the person that helped me with IP tables is Alain Sylvain, and he is his nick is D2 Racing. He's actually a moderator on the Gen 2 forums, and also he is the administrator of the Gen 2 Quebec website. It's a it has a lot of how-tos and also a forum and a lot of that for French speaking Gen 2 users and French speaking Linux users in general. It's based out of Quebec, Canada. And I had talked to him before, and he was in the process of studying IP tables. I asked him to give me a hand to set up the IP tables, and he started with a very basic script, but it's very advanced. And we started with that script, and from there we did the testing, and eventually I got it working the way that that I wanted. I had to open ports for the web server. I had to open ports for rsync, which is Gentoo uses rsync to update the database as far as what packages are available, and it compares what packages are available to what packages you have installed, and then Portage will figure out the dependencies based on that, and when you go ahead and you do an emerge, which is installing new programs or updating programs, it actually uses that rsync database, I'll call it, to figure out what versions and what programs to install and what libraries such as that to install in order to make sure that all the dependencies are met. So I had to open up the ports for rsync. I had to open up the ports for the FTP, the file transfer protocol. I had to open up the ports for a mail. I had to open up the ports for IMAP for mail. That's pretty much it. The IP tables I have, I ended up with all of these TCP ports opened up, 20, 21, 25, 53, 80, 873, 1024, and also I opened up a port for SSH, very important. I opened up a port, not the normal port for SSH. Then I had to open up another a UDP port was 25 and 53. So I had to make sure all those ports were open, and that basically covered a well-rounded web web server that has a mail server also included. The mail server is included so that the wiki is able to send mail out. It's a very good feature. If you get a wiki that's getting a lot of different people putting information in, it will actually email you when a page is changed. And what this helps out, it helps with moderating spam. I make sure that anybody that's registered on the wiki, the Python group wiki, or any wiki that I set up, it's not open. They're not open wikis. There, you have to email me and ask permission, or just let me tell me that you want to open up an account. So what you'll do is you'll email me and tell me, hey, listen, Dave, I want an account on the Python wiki, Python group wiki. And I say, okay. So I open up an account and send you your password. Then you log in, then you can change your password. And you can't change your username, but you can change your password if you want. So sometimes people, spam artists, I guess you call them, they're legitimate people because it's not a bot that's sending this request to me over an email. But I guess they just figure nobody's going to, or I'm not going to keep an eye on the wiki. But what they'll do is they'll go ahead and register, and then they'll try to slip in a link, you know, they won't even do any really doing any of the wiki themselves. They'll edit what somebody else did and then throw in some kind of stupid link to somewhere. So I catch that with the email, and right off the bat, I disable their account and ban them. What this will do is it'll ban them from creating a new account, but they'll be able to get onto the site and they'll be able to try to log in. And what happens is when they log in, it'll just tell them that they entered the wrong password, and it'll just run them around in circles for a while. So this is my little way of getting back to them. So basically, it doesn't ban them from the site. It just bans them from ever creating an account again. And it blocks their email address. It blocks their IP address from ever being able to sign up. So that's pretty neat. I've had a few of those happen. Not a lot, just a couple. And it's, I kind of get a kick out of it, really, especially because I get an email when there's failed login attempts. And so I'll get an email when this knucklehead keeps trying to log in. So there we got IP tables is done. The next thing is, like I said, I MySQL, I got that set up. I created my root password. And then the next install was the Doku Wiki. And it's a pretty straightforward install. It's once you have everything set up, it's pretty easy. You just follow the directions, basically. And then the big install was the more complicated install is the mail server. Now, for the mail server, I use Postfix, Courier, Courier IMAP, Squirrel Mail, and Spam Assassin. And there's a few good guides on the Gen2 website. There's also a couple pretty good guides in the Gen2 wiki. And I, on my wiki, I have I included my main.cf. And what I'll do is I'll go ahead and install Postfix by itself, just a simple install, just basically to be able to use it as a intra-mail server. So I test it first with Mutt, and what I'll do is I'll just send myself some emails and make sure that Postfix is working. And once I know that it'll work over the intranet, then I'll go ahead and edit the configuration file and go ahead and enable it for a full-fledged mail server. And go ahead and install Courier IMAP, Squirrel Mail, and Spam Assassin. And Spam Assassin is pretty easy to set up with Postfix. You just add it to the master.cf. And what it'll do is whenever you get a mail sent in, it will run it through Spam Assassin first and to do the filtering. And that's about it for the little server install. The other thing that I did was that I had my first review to become a full-fledged Gen2 developer. This review was on my e-build quiz, and I did pretty good. I didn't pass it with flying colors. What happened was is that I understood the answers that I gave on in the actual quiz, but when Beetle Guys is the developer who did the review, and he's a very, very smart guy. So he asked me a few additional questions on the actual questions that I answered, a little bit more in depth. And what happened on a few of them was that the questions that he asked me, I didn't know. And you can't look it up real quick, and you know, you have to kind of study this stuff. So I needed to redo a couple of the additional questions that he had asked me. So I did that, and I've sent that back in, so I'm just waiting for the next review. I think the next time I've got a pretty good grasp on it, and I think I'll be able to go through it the next time. Now, this is only the first phase of it. There's two phases that I know of. The first phase is the e-build quiz, and the next phase is the in-quiz. The e-build quiz is basically about e-builds and the different ways that you go ahead and update e-builds. It's the different ways that you update to the CVS servers developing process. it doesn't really get into any coding. The next quiz, which is the end quiz, it looks like it had a lot more basic Bash questions. Well, not even maybe some advanced Bash questions. I don't know. I'm so new to Bash, I couldn't tell you what it was basic and what's advanced, because it's all kind of a little bit advanced to me. I've been studying Bash for now for a couple months, and that's on top of now using Linux for 6 years and knowing, you know, the basics, but not really Bash scripting and stuff like that. So I'm learning that also. So I think what's going to happen too the next time when I do this end quiz is I got my answers on the end quiz itself is good, and I understand those pretty good. But my problem is when they start branching out, and especially with a experienced developer like Beetle Guys, you know, this stuff is like comes second nature to him. He's been doing it for years, and he also went to school and everything for it. So, but that's what happens to me is when if something that I didn't really study or I don't really, well, you just say you don't know. So when I say I don't know, then I don't know. And what'll happen is then I'll figure it out. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to get there. It just might take me a little bit longer, but I think I'm going to get it. And I'm definitely getting better at this, because even my work on Bugzilla is getting more professional, let's say. I'm starting to understand the build process better. Gentoo builds these programs from source. So what the actual e-build does is it goes ahead and applies patches and different configuration options so that the end user, when they install this program from source, that it basically is going to work for them out of the box with the default settings in place and without it crashing and all that, and making sure that it is installed with all the dependencies that are needed, so in order that the program runs properly. So not only do you have to know how to compile programs from source, but you really need to know how to patch, make files. You need to know how to research upstream to make sure to find their patches that they've used. Debian is very good because they put their patches on their website with their packages. So you can search Debian, and a lot of times you can find the patches on the Debian site. Now they're patching their own, you know, their own devs, but you can still use those patches and incorporate them into the Gentoo source build. So that's been pretty interesting. And the other thing that I've been doing, or I'm going to do, is tonight we're going to have the second podcast for the techcast.us. That's the podcast that I'm doing with Edward, TKO09, and Russ Weiner from the Techie Geek podcast. So that's tech.us. Just a second, let me get the, make sure I'm not messing up here. So, yeah, here it is. Yeah, it's techcast.us. So hopefully here in another 15 minutes, we'll go ahead and get that done. So let's see. So I've only got 10 more minutes. So that should be good enough for a little quickie podcast. So I just wanted to keep you up to date and let you know what's going on. So once again, if you need to get in touch with me, just go ahead and email me at david@linuxcrazy.com for, please, any comments or suggestions that you have. I'd love to hear them. Also, stop by Freenode. That's IRC. And the channel is #LinuxCrazy or #LinuxCrazy. And I'll talk to y'all in a couple weeks. I'll do another podcast. I've been trying to arrange an interview. And I've sent out a couple emails. I haven't heard anything back. but I'll get something going with an interview. The interviews are actually easier for me because all I do is ask the questions. I don't really have to think about an answer, so I kind of enjoy them. It's really less work on me. It's a little more work, the preparation work, but in the long run, it's a little easier. So I enjoy doing them, and most people said they enjoy hearing them. So we'll keep that up. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.